So as to why that became a racist thing, even today, I still don't understand. But I did apologize. And my apology was purely because of the hurt that they endured because of this thing was spun around and quoted out of context, or misquoted, basically. Not even quoted out of context, misquoted, and was just vulgarized, as it were. So I had to apologize for the hurt. But the principle of saying that they need to be represented in all the provinces still stays even as we speak.
Yes.
Is there still a requirement for that? In fact, I meet some of the colors that have become successful in Gauteng. They say, we listened to you.
Yeah.
They say, we listened to you.
Yes.
So they are thriving here, because I wanted them to be first in line in other provinces.
Yes.
They would have been first in line, because imagine in Limpopo, if you're looking for a color, the first guy that you come across, hey,
yes,
you're hired.
Yes.
That's what I wanted for them.
Yes.
There was no ill feeling.
There was no malice.
No.
But even politically, even within the ANC, because I remember very well at that time, there was even a writing of open letters. I would remember the likes of Trevor Manuel,
yes,
Kadasmal, may his soul rest in peace. There was just chaos inside the ANC.
Yeah.
I think the ANC itself was sort of confused about how to handle that situation. I remember Gwede Mantashe tried to defend you, but it was a mess. Why do you think it blew up that much? As you say, it even was much later than you.
It's because it was media sponsored.
Yeah.
So media came with, because they didn't want me to head GCIS.
Yes.
Yeah, they just didn't want me there, because they've got my history of transformation before GCIS, because after I did two things before GCIS. One was a DG of Labour, enforcing employment equity, but I was also the chairperson of the Commission for Employment Equity.
Mm-hmm.
So I was supervising companies, including media, for their representation. So I was not a popular guy with the corporate, because I was there to say the numbers are not numbering.
Yes.
Where are the Africans? We there's no shortage. Why don't you have them in position? So I was just not a popular guy. I know this. So when I got there, they said, not here. So they just didn't want me there. So they came. In fact, the guy that spoke and assisted me to sort this out in the ANC is the late Jackson Mthembu.
Yes.
Yeah, I was a spokesperson of the ANC at the time. And he said, hello, the man has not served one day in this position. Give him a chance.
Yes.
First, let him fail here, rather. And all of that. And I think they listened to Jackson Mthembu and all of that. And then I carried on, and there were no issues up until I left.
And how was your experience there at GCIS, which is the same job that landed you at the Zondo Commission of Inquiry? How did you experience the whole thing? How did you find that space, especially when it comes to media buying and advert placement within the space that we operate in, the media space?
Well, look, I think if you go to GCIS, even today, you'll find my footprint there.
Yeah.
Yeah, you will know that my knee was here.
Yeah.
Yeah, in GCIS. I professionalized that space.
Yes.
One of the first things that I did there was to, you know, in GCIS, when I arrived, the last conference, press conference that Themba Maseko had, he did it at Union Buildings and all of that. So when I came, within 2 weeks, I moved that whole thing into GCIS. GCIS had an auditorium, had the equipment, just needed to do this, that, and that very quickly to have it synchronized with the studio in Cape Town. And there were ICT guys in the department. I said, but why are we going to Union Building? Use this place. And trust me, within 2 weeks, we turned the auditorium of GCIS in Pretoria to be where press briefings were going to be. So we owned the issue of communication at GCIS. We made GCIS the pulse of communication, and we made it the vision. I found the vision statement of the Nechitenzes of this world that was there, a whole paragraph. And then I would call people and say, what is the vision of GCIS? Nobody would know. It's a whole paragraph, a whole political preamble. That was there. I said, remove this thing, 1-5 words, to be the pulse of government communications.
Mm-hmm.
Something to that effect. And that was it for the longest of time. I'm sure they've changed it now for whatever reason. But that's what it was. So if at my in my era, you were to ask anyone, everybody would knew what is a vision. This is the thing that we're aiming to do. So indeed, we did that. And then with this consolidation of budgets from different departments, we then did bulk buying. So if I come to Sunday World, if a particular space costs this much in Sunday World, I say to Sunday World, Sunday World, I'm not only going to buy the space for 1 million. I'm going to buy, I've got 10 million on my kitty that I want to spend. Give me a good value. Now, instead of, you say, okay, 10 million, I give it to you now, 10 million. You say, okay, instead of me giving you one space, I'll give you two or three spaces and so on, because now I'm giving you cash flow. So I used to use that spending power to get more mileage in terms of government publicity and all of that. So indeed, would do that, and it worked very well. And would also do cost saving. Would say to media, if the space is 1 million, if I buy 10 spaces, how much is it going to cost me? And they say, okay, if you buy 10, maybe it's not 1 million this time, maybe 500,000.
Yes.
Word savings, you know, you can go to the financials even today. Look at the year 2011, 2012, you'll find that GCIS saved 30 million out of that arrangement of bulk buying. Because of the economies of scale, we're able to reduce the unit costs and we're able to advertise at a much lower rate than individually going to these things. So that's what we used to do at GCIS. In fact, you know, let me say this, that I had two jobs whilst I was at GCIS.
Yeah.
One, I was at GCIS and I was a cabinet spokesperson.
Yes, yes.
So whilst running the department full-time like any other DG, I was also attending cabinet committees. I was attending cabinet. And I would have to come out and do a press statement. I was reading it myself. As a GCIS, as a cabinet spokesperson. Now that role is done by ministers, so my shoes have
been
filled.
We're too big to
have been filled by ministers. We have been Chaveni there, yeah. And Jackson Mthembu. They do that. I used to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, over and above running a department. So yeah. This is a caliber of people that we have at MK today. People with a lot of competence.
Yes.
Yeah, and all of that. So yeah.
Mm. And then when you came to the JGZ Foundation, you came at a very, very, busy time in that foundation, yeah. Because there was Zondo Commission, there was all sorts of things around the patron, which is former President Zuma. How did you adjust to that situation when you came in at the foundation with all the traffic that was going on and all the things that were going on in there? And how would you say you have felt in that particular responsibility up to this point?
No, look, you must remember, it was a difficult time that. Yeah. That was a time that President Zuma, everybody associated with him sort of were distancing themselves and were running away from him and all of that. And so I did that role. And for me, it was not a complicated job because I believed in President Zuma's story. Mm-hmm. I believed that all he required was somebody that can articulate his side of the story. And I thought with my government experience and me having experienced what he had done and all of this, I knew that I'm equal to the task in terms of assisting him to articulate his side of the story in the public space. Because when I came in there, President Zuma is a very private person. Did not want, I said, Baba, it's not helping that your side of the story is not out there. Let me do that part. And we agreed and then all of that. So mine was to make sure that the other day I had a discussion with, who's this guy at Newsroom now?
Koli
just says in live on TV that President Zuma refused to go to the commission. I say, Koli, how can you lie like this? President Zuma has been the commission thrice. Yeah. And the problem was the issue of him having an issue with Zondo. That was conflicted and what have you. But to make a statement and say he refused to go to the commission is factually incorrect. So it's all those kinds of similar kinds of things. I mean, you guys in the Sunday World, Sunday Times, you said President Zuma has a house in Dubai.
Yeah, it's not us.
Sunday Times. Sunday Times says President Zuma has got a house. Even today, they still have not, it's a lie.
Yeah.
So for me, my job was easy to make sure that I expose the lies. I mean, even right now, President Zuma has got a stigma of being corrupt and everything. It's a lie. President Zuma is not corrupt. In fact, there's this thing about 9 wasted years that people have not understood. And I keep explaining this to people that no, the 9 wasted years is true that there were 9 wasted years, but the issue is who wasted 9 years? And the issue is that the 9 wasted years were years in which white monopoly capital failed to co-opt President Zuma. They had 9 of the years wasted because they failed to co-opt President Zuma to get him to drive their own agenda. So they wasted 9 years. So the 9 wasted years refers to that.
Yeah.
Because if you look at the delivery of President Zuma in that period, it is unparalleled. This has been the period when President Zuma, even on infrastructure spending, he had spent over R1 trillion to build infrastructure of this country. Even today, no president can say that. President Zuma built 2 universities. No president can do that. When President Zuma started, the country was burying people out of HIV and AIDS issues. Some 300,000 people had died at the time President Zuma took office. And he made sure that the rollout of ARVs is up and about. And he saved lives in the true sense of the word, not this COVID nonsense of saying we save lives, but actually killing people. So President Zuma saved lives in the true sense of the word. He built hospitals. I mean, look at the freeways he's done. In KZN, there's that spaghetti one next to, what's that place? There's a nice thing. But it's just too much to mention.
Yes.
And importantly, in President Zuma's era, he managed to even stop load shedding. So his success is objectively documented. You can see that the man actually delivered. So then the 9 wasted years is not him not doing anything. It's the failure of white monopoly capital to co-opt him and make him his stooge. They wasted 9 years for that. Now they've got their stooge. So now we have a problem. We have a high unemployment, we've got high inequality and all of this mess that is happening. We've got almost a nanny state with some 18 odd million people that are depending on government for them to survive. It's a mess.
And what is the state of President Zuma at the moment about the country, as it were, the state of affairs in the country? Someone who interacts with him now, both as chief whip of MKP and as the spokesperson of his foundation. What like things that he normally won't say, as you say, he's a private person, doesn't like speaking out there, but maybe in private, things that he expresses, concerns or, good things that he says about the country.
President Zuma wants the country to press a reset button.
Yeah.
He wants us to go back to basics. He wants us to go to the beginning. Mm-hmm. What is the beginning? The beginning is that the chiefs of this country, the kings of this country, were dignified people. Yeah. These are the people that actually fought the wars, not the politicians. These are the people where the land was taken from the kings of this country. So he wants their dignity restored. He wants them to run affairs like they did before the Europeans came to do the robbery that they've done. So he wants that back on stage. And he really is a peaceful person. President Zuma has got no agenda to chase Europeans out of the country, no. But he wants them to cooperate with us in a manner that respects, has got mutual respect, Ubuntu, there's dignity and all of that. They must not think that on the basis of white, they are superior, they are not, and all of that, basis of their race. No, they are not. They just need to accept and understand that. And all President Zuma wants is to ensure that our land, the land must return to the real owners, but it must also be used productively. So he would want to make sure that agriculture is not disturbed. Agriculture must happen the way it should. The issue, and when you say agriculture, it cannot be that only 10 Africans are involved there, and there's so many of us that can do this thing. I mean, I was looking at Professor Mamukheti. He's busy in agriculture with a whole PhD, and she's proving the point. She's a woman, and she's busy now with that thing, and she's making a success in that thing, which just shows that Africans can do this thing, and all of that. She left the hills, high hills of and all of that. She's succeeding in that thing.
Yes.
So Africans can do this. So all President Zuma wants is that let's get a lot more all of those kinds of entrepreneurs to be in that space. Let them get the opportunity to be in that space. Let them get the opportunity to be commercial. We cannot have a situation where we are now comfortable with people sitting in the various informal settlements in Alex, Kostchwetla areas, Duncan Village, and all other shack areas where now it has become normal to be there. President Zuma is having sleepless nights about that. Mm. And he wants everybody to have a fair piece of land. Also because as Africans want to do our rituals in our own yards. So President Zuma wants everybody to have his yard so that you can do your rituals in your own yard, in your own privacy and all of that. That's what he wants done. The economy of this, he has a problem with the fact that we've got so many people depending on the state when these people are physically and mentally able to work for themselves. So he wants jobs created. He wants an economy that is job creating so that everybody can have the decency of saying, I've earned my salary and all of that, and I've earned my living. That gives a person dignity. So people are being stripped of dignity to be queuing up for 350. That is it's a degradation. That thing is not something to be celebrated.
What would you say to those that say, but President Zuma had an opportunity to effect these changes that he wants to see when he was head of state between 2009 and 2018? What would you say to that criticism?
Yeah, I've heard that that's made by people who lack analysis. Yeah. In the first instance, that 9-year period is the best period that South Africa has ever had in the first place. This is the period that even on the elite space, the way BE is, every time you open a Sunday Times newspaper, you'd find a deal here and a deal there. Where are all those things now? In that era, this is the time when SME development was flourishing. President Zuma in 2011, he launched the Black Industrialist Program and all of that. I've got friends that are engineers that voted MK even when I was not in the MK. They voted MK because they said, I'm where I am because of the Zuma Industrialist Program and all of that. So President Zuma really delivered in his era. Some of the things that he could not deliver, he was undermined by his own caucus in the expropriation without compensation of, as an example. For instance, he had a clear position that the ANC should have worked with the EFF to ensure that they have that two-thirds. That 62 of the ANC and the 6 of the EFF were enough. But for some reason, the caucus of the ANC in parliament did something funny. They came up with, they actually rejected the ANC, the EFF 6%. That's what they did. And President Zuma is on record scolding the ANC for doing that. And then in 2017, he made sure that there is a clear resolution for this. Now we have a clear resolution even from the ANC on this expropriation, that compensation. So we hope that when the MK party raises the matter in this first quarter, that the ANC will support their own resolution. So we now have MK parties going to put this on the table. It should be aligned with the EFF. It should be aligned even with the ANC. So if this doesn't work, then we must know that it's the Africans that are a problem.
Yeah.
So MK party will expose this thing as to where exactly is the problem. Do we have puppets in that parliament or we don't? So if the ANC does not support this, then we must know that ANC are puppets. And whoever is there that's not going to support the MK party on this bill that we're going to put on the table in the first quarter, then those people who must know that they're working against the interests of the overwhelming majority of the people of this country.
Mm. On the point that you made earlier where you speak about the when you guys want the fitness of Shamina Patwe to be NPA head to be brought into the fore and debated, some would say, are you okay? What would you say to those who would say you are doing this because among your ranks, you have people that her administration at NPA is pursuing the likes of your MP Brian Molefe, Siyabonga Gama, and like Monta. Okay, let me say the so-called proponents of state capture, whom she was put in to pursue to end this so-called state capture. What would you say to people who say you are questioning her fitness because she's in pursuit of your own now, your own MPs?
But the question is, what are the facts?
Yeah.
The facts are Koko Majela is not in MK Parliament, mm-hmm. and he is one of the examples of the incompetencies of Patoi. Mm-hmm. He woke the guy up with his family at 5, even today. She's got nothing on Koko Majela. So that's just the cleanest example, just to disprove that Brian is there, and Montana there and all of that, Gama and all of those, it's by the way, the key issue in terms of showing that Patoi is useless is Koko Majela. Don't go anywhere because his case is much more advanced and all of that. Instead, I mean, you have a Patoi that is doing a deal with one of the companies that is mired in corruption. Instead of nailing that company for their involvement in corruption, she's doing a deal because they must give NPA, I don't know how much money, fine and stuff. So by what she's actually doing, she's even spoiling the narrative or the dignity of the prostitution, that if you have money, you can buy your way out. This is what the Patoi is doing, that you've got money, you can buy your freedom. If you've got no money, you go to jail. Yeah. What kind of prostitution is this?
Yeah, I understand. What is the state of affairs within the NKP? There's been a lot of, let me say, fire.
Yeah.
Is it real fire or is it imaginary fire? Especially now during December, there was a lot of conversations, especially in the social media.
Yeah, no. No, it's a good. What you call it? It's a good confrontation.
Yeah.
It's a good confrontation in that all these people are fighting for what's best for MK.
Mm-hmm.
You can go to any of these factions, all of them, they are united by one thing, that you. It's a finger pointing to say, we are doing better for MK, you are messing up MK. So when you look at it, it's people that are fighting on all sides for the good cause, and all of them, without fail, they are having their allegiance to the president of MK Party and all of that. So it's just a competition of who is doing better and all of that. So it's in the main that. It's a very different thing to other people that are fighting on ideology, are fighting on this. Here is people that are fighting, all of them, for the interest of the MK Party. But in the midst of that, obviously you'd have others that are now planted by the enemy to create more confusion. But a lot of the differences that are there, if you analyze them, you will find that there are differences emanating in reality from a positive side on both sides. And all that is required here is management of this. This is one of the projects I'm going to be doing in 2025. I'm going to be doing a project of recollecting the management, the professionals in the management space. I want to get that space reorganized. Because, I mean, a simple thing like this, you could have just dispatched BMF people who say, go and intervene there as a neutral party, get the parties around the table, get them. Manage conflict management.
Yes,
that's really all that is required there. So I think one of the things that we need to strengthen in this country is the role of professionals. And professionals, if they were deployed to go and kill this fire, they would have killed it like this, because they've got the methodology, they've got the systems, they've got the wherewithal of conflict resolution. Conflict resolution is a science.
Yes.
Yeah. So our professionals out there need to be galvanized to play their meaningful role in society. I know that professionals generally are very scared of politics, mm-hmm. but they just need to understand that if they don't play a role in managing the politics of the country, they will be on the receiving end.
Of the decisions of the politicians.
Yes, and all the processes that could have been improved if they had made a contribution.
Yeah. But isn't it too early, Mr. Mayor, for MKP? I mean, it's just a year old to be already having internal ructions and factions, regardless of what you state as the reasons of the conflict. But, I mean, it's a repealing type of a thing where people were seeing this thing as taking off, saying they are interested. Now they hear that people are fighting, they're like, is just another ANC.
No, those fights are not fundamental. Mm-hmm. They will be by, you mark my words, by mid-June,
yes.
Those fights will be gone by June. So these are not fundamental fights. These are just differences of opinion. People that have been, if you had people that were chained and unchained the people,
yeah.
It's people that are tasting freedom,
yeah.
and all of that.
You were chained in their previous.
Wherever they come from, they were chained. Now this is a freedom in the MK party. Now is handling that freedom
mm-hmm.
that is creating all these problems. So I think very soon, there is a process that the leadership of the MK party is working on to make sure that we contain the freedom.
Oh, okay. Yeah. It must not be too much. No,
it's freedom that must be channeled.
Yes.
And it's good energy.
Yes.
I think we are very fortunate as MK party to even have that
mm-hmm.
because it means we have people that really love this organization. You must remember that there are people who gave it all to make sure that MK is where it is today. So those people are jealously guarding their contributions. When others come and don't recognize the role that these ones played, then that sometimes where the conflict comes. These ones have been coming up and making all kinds of contributions. So there has to be a merging of forces and to make sure that the growth is managed, as it were. So that's all that is required, the management of the growth. These are growth pains.
Yes.
Everybody that has got growth in their system will have pains. Ask your wife, she'll tell you about it.
Yes.
There's growth pains, a baby growing up in their tummies, at some point it becomes painful because of the growth. So growth has got pains. If you've got no pain, you've got no growth.
Yeah. What would you say to the criticism that MKP is a Zuma family dynasty?
Where is his family? I'm trying to understand.
It's President Zuma, it's Duduzile Zuma, it's Duduzane Zuma now. Duduzane, remember now, he's also.
Where?
No, he's not in leadership, but he's a member of MK.
What's
now.
Wrong with that?
There's nothing wrong. I'm contextualizing why those that are criticizing are saying so. It's because of the proximity of the members who are even outside leadership, the perceived real influence of Duduzile on President Zuma. You see, I say perceived or real because I don't know, I'm not in there. But there is a perception. It can be real, it may not be real. And then the fact that most of MKP affairs happen at Kwadwa Dunuze household, which is a family home of the Zumas.
Yeah, let me help you. Yeah. Firstly, President Zuma is a family man.
Yes.
Duduzile, Duduzana are his children.
Yes.
If anybody was to red card me for having my children close to me, that person is an animal.
Mm-hmm.
President Zuma cannot be criticized for loving his children.
Correct.
But his love for the children has not compromised how the organization is run. In the top eight of the MK party, he's the only Zuma there. So where is evidence for this thing that you're talking about? They are not in that top eight where most of the action happens, as it were. So where's the problem? In parliament, she's not the chief whip in parliament, Ututuzile. She's in parliament. So where is this thing? So it's just a figment of the imagination of the people. But all that started the Duduzane thing It's when, in fact, I think it was an escort in the when there was a funeral or the discussion around the six people that had died in an accident. So Duduzane came to join the father in the memorial service. Mm-hmm. Now, a father and a son going into a memorial service has now become a problem. This is how animalized people have become. That when you're with your family, it's a problem. I went with my wife to Nkandla. Some idiot on Twitter had an issue with this, that I'm taking my wife to Nkandla. What's the problem? It's a festive season.
Yes.
What should I have done? If I wanted to spend time with the festivities of Nkandla and my wife is happy to join me, why is that a problem?
Yes.
So it just shows that the society has lost its values. And I think they should learn from President Zuma that the issue of the family is crucial and important. And we encourage President Zuma to bring most of his children. They must come to the MK party. It's only the ones that you've mentioned now. More should come, and all of us should bring our children. I will bring my family to the MK party. And I think I'm encouraging all of us. Charity begins at home. If it's good for me to be in the MK party, I must encourage my family. So President Zuma must lead by example. He must bring his children into the party. Absolutely nothing wrong with that.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then talking about family values, you are also known for as that guy who has strong family values. How long have you been married now? I think it's like 40 years or
this
something.
This year, September, I'll be married for 40 years to the same woman without a fed up leave and all of that. So,
we're inspired.
So I have a lot of time for President Zuma. Close knit with his family, because I'm like that myself.
Yes.
I'm a present father. I could say that without any fear of contradiction. I am a present father. My child knows they are probably as old as you.
Yes.
But they know that when they've got a problem, they can call their father and all of that. Every day of the week, I know where all my children are. I never have a situation where I actually don't know where they are.
Yeah.
And so I'm a very present father. I don't interfere in their lives, but I'm aware what is happening, and we communicate and all of that. And I think it's how it should be.
And why are family values so important to you personally, as you say, that's what you practice?
I think family values bring societal values. Imagine if you had people that have got strong family values, we would not have these kinds of things where you find a 60-year-old person like me, I'm 60 years plus, a 60-year-old person having an affair with an 18-year-old. At a morality level,
yes,
you have those kinds of problems. When you find an old married man having some affair with some girl that just happens to be the friend of even your own child. So those kinds of things are avoided if you've got strong family values. Because when I see a child the age of my daughter,
you see your child.
I see my child. Mm-hmm. I don't see a potential, stuff like that. So I think family values are the cornerstone of society. If there's one thing that we should all build and encourage, is strong families.
Yeah.
Strong families, strong society, strong country.
Yeah. What can people expect, finally, Mr. Mani, from yourself this year? You are a very busy man. But besides the things that we've spoken about, the plans of MKP, but personally, are there any other things that you would be surprising?
On the 24th, 25th, somewhere 25th January, as an example, I'll be speaking on Bitcoin. You know, in the MK party, we are showing interest in the Bitcoin. We think Bitcoin is the new email. You know, when the email came, the fax people and the Telegram people thought this thing is a fad that's going to disappear. Email is a fact of life today. So Bitcoin is the new currency that is going to displace it's going to complement the current situation. So the sooner we adapt to this, if I look at countries like El Salvador and a couple other countries, even Trump is going the Bitcoin route. So if South Africa still thinks Bitcoin is some crypto pyramid scheme of sorts, they'll be very late. By the time they catch on with it, it will be too expensive. So the opportunity is to get into Bitcoin sooner rather than later, so that you can be on the upside and then you can retire the debt of the country. I mean, you can't have a situation in South Africa where the one line item on our financials is the debt service cost. And I'm saying with the Bitcoin growth, we can square that debt off in a couple of years. So the new thing for me going forward is to be the ambassador, unpaid ambassador of Bitcoin, is for me to be involved much more outside Parliament with rebuilding the professional cadre space, even across political lines. I really think that the issue of rebuilding the professionals in the country is very crucial. Yes. So I'll be involved with those kinds of projects.
On a much lighter note now, final for you. I laugh because I'm being naughty. You were one of the people who appear to have been duped by this guy, Tavo Best.
Yes, I was.
Attended what? That birthday party?
Yeah. No, I didn't attend a birthday party. Well, what happened?
Yes.
At that time, yes, I was still at NN7. Mm-hmm. So this thing was, I think the company is called the 21st Century something. Mm-hmm. It's a media company. Yes. That's how it was profiled. So there was a media function at that 17 venue. Mm-hmm. So we went there to the launch of this media company. That's what this thing was about. Yes. And at that time, there was no birthday party or anything. It was the launch of the company. We were ambushed.
Yeah.
It's almost like if you go to watch a Chiefs and Pirates match,
yeah,
at the stadium. In the middle of the stadium, they say, well, today is Ivan Khoza's birthday.
Yes.
And then we get told that we are attending Ivan Khoza's birthday. You know, it's exactly the same thing. So whilst we're in the function on the launch of this 21st century media company,
yes,
and then voila, then the birthday of this guy. Yeah, so that's what actually happened.
Yes.
Yeah, not that we left going to a birthday party. No.
No, yeah.
We're going to a launch of the 21st century media company.
Yes.
And I was in the media space, so it was my space.
Yeah.
So that was why I was there.
Yeah, yeah. And how did you feel now when all these revelations about who this guy is? I mean, of course, at the time, we can't blame you. No one knew that he is the
guy. That guy is a pro, eh?
Yeah.
That guy, he is a pro. He is the guy that is in the movies.
Yeah.
That guy. I think somebody must write a book about that guy.
Yeah.
Let alone all the things that he has done and all of that, but how he has done this thing and maneuver and make the right connections where he should have to be able to stitch things the way he did, I give it to him.
Yeah.
The guy is a pro.
Mr. Tower Best.
He's a pro. He's a pro. I really give it to him.
You kill me. Out of room.
I am from straight. Ah, that guy's a pro. Imagine a guy that is in jail,
yes,
and then over weekends, somehow, with all the corruption and whatever, manages to go and have a free time at Balito or everywhere, have fun and everything, and then say, hey, they are going to count us. Let me rush back. And somehow, has got the entire thing,
yes,
the whole infrastructure, to be able to do that. And then he's able, he's able to use the computers in prison. Somehow prison officials have not understood that when you've got internet for studying, you can also use it for your other things. They have not found a way of restricting access to other things. Mm-hmm. As it were, I just don't know. You see, this is incompetence, if you ask me.
Yeah. Mr. Mani, I understand it's your birthday on January 20th. Happy birthday.
Yeah, thank you.
60 plus, you're on retirement age. You must retire very soon.
Yeah, by the way, the 20th date is the official date. My actual date is the 18th of January.
Oh, is it?
I discovered that when I was 50.
You?
Yeah, I went to Barra to go. I knew that my age was a guesstimate.
Yes.
You know, I'm from that era where the parents say, and all of that. So my it was estimated date. So I had the time when I was 50. Then I went to, it was at Randwater. So I went to Barra And when I get there, I found this clerk there in the front, and all these files. And this guy said, "Well, I haven't got time. If you want to go, you can go." Then I went to the strong room, and then I had the time. And I was fortunate, they've got all kinds of files there. Fortunately, they're properly filed. I just went to my date, 1964, pulled that out. And because I was a January baby, so within an hour, I was able to find my mother's name and my date and me there.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So that's how I knew. Yeah. My actual date is 18th January, but in the ID is 20 January. So I celebrate both.
Was this the same time where you reached your Damascus moment for the name dropping Jimmy and going with your African name?
No, that happened. It's probably around the same time, but that happened in 2015 with the Fees Must Fall. Before they were Fees Must Fall, it was Roads Must Fall.
Yes,
yeah. So when Roads was falling, that's when these young people woke me up to say, "Man, actually, Roads brought us a lot of strife in this country, and all of this and all of that." And that's when I began to say, well, if Rhodes must fall, Jimmy must fall.
Yeah.
By the way, I mean, I also remembered. I've always known this, but I just didn't pay attention to it. I got the name Jimmy because my parents were trying to make it easier for me to get a job so that a white man can make it easy for him. So for me, Jimmy is an enablement of a European to be able to call me. So I now take the view that says, if you can't say Mzwanele, then it's your problem.
Yes.
Yeah. So I've even removed it from my ID.
Yes.
Yeah. So if you want to offend me,
you must say Jimmy.
You must say
Jimmy. and they like offending you.
Yeah,
there.
And I block them.
Yeah.
I don't know, because now everybody knows this.
Yeah.
So when you say Jimmy, there's no discussion.
Have you blocked Sinclair as well? Because there seems to be another one who enjoys
That one. He twists the name, he says Mjimaro, and all kinds of things. And I block him from time to time.
Yeah.
But sometimes I have to see his mischief.
Yeah.
Then I unblock him. So I'm on and off with him.
Yeah.
Because sometimes he gets his moments of genius, he says the right things.
Yeah.
But all the time he talks a lot of nonsense and all of that. So I ignore him.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So, you know, I don't write people off.
Yeah.
So though St. Clair is generally useless,
yeah,
but one of some days...
Thank you so much again, Mr. Mzwani Remanye.
Yeah.
That is Mzwani Remanye, the chief whip of the MK party, as well as the spokesperson of the Jacob Gedleyihlekisa Zuma Foundation, who joined us today for the first episode of 2025. I am Mwanda Mashabalala. Join us next time, and don't forget to subscribe, comment, and give us your advice on how to improve and where we would have loved us to do better in the future on our page on YouTube, Sunday World Podcast. Until next time, salute.